I'm going to call this meeting to order, the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors for September 23rd, 2014. Please rise and join me in the salute to our nation's flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we have no presentations this morning. We will begin with a public comment for members of the audience who wish to address this board on a non-agenda item. If you would like to speak on an agenda item, you have to wait till that item comes up. I have no speaker cards, but if you'd like to speak, please come to the podium, state your name for the record.
I have some handouts to give you too that I hand them over yet.
Just going to give those to the clerk.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm Catherine Borges of Salida Mac, and the topic I would like to address to you today is Mayor Marsh's town hall meeting held in this room last Saturday. If you read Kevin Berlin's article in the Modesto Bee, you'll know the mayor placed blame for wanting to annex Wood Colony to supposedly protect them from the county. But the article didn't mention what he said about Salida. Mayor Marsh tried to justify land grabs on Salida by ignoring the Salida community plan just because he doesn't like it. Modesto City Councilman John Gunderson also went on Dave Bowman's radio show last Tuesday, and he said that he discussed with one landowner about annexing their land into Modesto from that's in the Salida community plan. I have tried doing a public information request to the city regarding this, but it didn't turn up anything, but their city attorneys may be suppressing it, those documents from the request. Irregardless, I want to let you know these occurrences and ask for your support against any threatened land grabs against the Salida community plan. The mayor also said that the county and city butt heads, which I don't disagree with, especially if the city is throwing the county under the bus at public meetings. I also want to address the graffiti program that Mayor Marsh outlined at the town hall. He mentioned wanting to get the county involved with graffiti abatement in the county areas of Modesto. As a county constituent, I would request having citizens' input into whatever their intentions for the county may be, and I am happy to volunteer to do this. And being that I have launched a successful graffiti program in Salida via Take Back Salida, which we launched in January of this year. In the last 9 months, volunteers in Salida have cleaned hundreds of graffiti tags and worked with the Sheriff's Department to even catch vandals in the act. We would not have done this without the support of our Supervisor Withrow, with Public Works Director Matt Machado, with Graffiti Abatement Department that's headed by Jamie Eggers, and with Sheriff Christensen. Public Works provides us with very cost-effective anti-graffiti wipes, which are also used by the City of Fresno that volunteers use to clean graffiti in Salida. We hope that you will continue to supply Salida with the wipes, and I'd be happy to share our program with you if you would like to implement it countywide. I'm working on a manual for it, and I'm also willing to do a PowerPoint presentation. Thank you for your support of Salida in these aspects, gentlemen. And the handouts I gave are the Salida Mac newsletter, and if you look on the back of it, it talks about the successes we've had in our graffiti efforts. Thank you.
And thank you for your comments. Is there anybody else who wishes to address this board on a non-agenda item? Well, Terry, would you like to say something?
Sorry,
I forgot to press your button.
Get my button. Sorry. I just want to thank Catherine for all you're doing in the city. Modesto, it would be great if they could pick up the program that you're doing as far as the graffiti abatement out there in Salida. It's unbelievable what you guys have done. And I know with the help of the sheriffs and have been involved too. And so it would be great for the city of Modesto to come to you guys and to see what you're doing. You would be the perfect example for that. So anyway, thank you, Catherine, for all you're doing out there.
Is there anybody else who would like to address this board on a non-agenda item? Okay, we will move to the consent calendar. Any member of this board wish to pull an item from consent? Okay, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
So moved.
Okay, motion's been made and and seconded that we approve the consent calendar. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, motions carried. Okay, being that it's 9:05, we will do our public hearing to consider the adoption of the keeper grants. Morning, Angela.
Good morning, Chairman DeMartini, members of the board, Mr. Rise and Mr. Doring, Angela Freitas, Planning Director. The Planning Department is here this morning to present the paper for fiscal year 2013-2014 as required by HUD. Together with its partner cities, the county forms the Stanislaus Urban County for purposes of receiving Community Development Block Grant and Emergency Solution Grant funding. With me this morning to help present the paper are Juan Gonzalez and Kristen Dowd.
Good morning, Chairman DeMartini, members of the board, CEO Risen, Mr. Doring. Before you this morning is the Stanislaus Urban County Consolidated Annual Performance Evaluation Report for fiscal year 2013-2014. As Angela mentioned, in partnership with the cities of Ceres, Houston, Newman, Oakdale, Patterson, and Waterford, Stanislaus County is defined as an urban county by the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development. As an entitlement community, the Stanislaus Urban County is eligible for annual formula grants from HUD, including CDBG and ESG. When using CDBG funds, one of the three national objectives must be met for each funded activity. These are to serve low and moderate income people, address slum and blight, or meet an urgent need in the community. Stanislaus County decides which of these three objectives will be met by each funded activity. As a recipient of HUD entitlement funds, the Stanislaus Urban County is required to prepare a 5-year consolidated plan, annual action plan, and performance report at the conclusion of each fiscal year. In compliance with citizen participation plan requirements, Stanislaus County must make the CAPER available for a 15-day public review period and report funding allocations as well as accomplishments for the fiscal year. As such, the fiscal year 2013-14 allocation for CDBG was about $2.1 million and about $144,000 for ESG. This table provides a breakdown of the distribution of CDBG funds between the urban county membership and special programs such as public services and fair housing. Activity allocations are based on a census data poverty and population formula.
In addition to marking the second year of the consolidated planning effort, fiscal year 13-14 marked the second full year of infrastructure project development following the dissolution of redevelopment agencies in California. Just prior to the dissolution of redevelopment, this board identified three infrastructure projects that were to be the focus of redevelopment and CDBG funding. Those were the airport sewer, the Empire Storm Drain, and the Parkland sewer projects. While there has been much success in moving forward with some of the projects post-redevelopment, there have also been challenges, including the need to shift away from the Empire project following construction of only one of four phases. The first shift allowed for the construction of the first phase of the Parkland sewer project. This was a move that could have committed CDBG funding to the Parkland project for unknown multiple years. Fortunately, as construction of the first phase was completed in fiscal year 13-14, so was an award of funding from the State Water Board to complete the project. Final construction of the project is currently underway. Last week, the Board of Supervisors awarded the construction contract for the first phase of the airport sewer project, with anticipation that State Water Board funds will also be secured to complete that project. Earlier in the month, the Board of Supervisors accepted the Empire Community Storm Drain Report prepared by the county's Public Works Department, offering a lower-cost, low-impact development swale system design option to meet the stormwater needs of Empire. This option reduces the approximate $15 million cost of the four remaining phases of the original positive storm drain design to an approximate $2.8 million cost that can be constructed in one phase or multiple phases sized to available funding and with the added benefit of sidewalks that were not included as part of the original drain. With the effort to develop the next consolidated plan underway, the commitment will remain to fully complete all three of the county's identified infrastructure projects. As with the county, our urban county partners have also had to adjust project timelines and phasing to respond to the loss of redevelopment.
So during fiscal year 2013, each urban county also, each urban county city also undertook infrastructure projects of their own within their communities. As Angela mentioned, most urban county cities have also had to modify their timelines and phase out their projects to adjust to the loss of redevelopment. During fiscal year 2013, NSP activity also continued. During the year, the urban county acquired an additional 4 housing units. 4 previously acquired units were also sold to first-time homebuyers with down payment assistance. And to date, a total of 80 homes have been sold. In fiscal year 2013, a substantial amendment to the NSP program was also conducted to allow the use of NSP program income to be used to address abandoned dangerous buildings. At this point, I'll hand it over to Kristen for a recap on CDBG and ESG.
So as stated earlier, 10% of each fiscal year's allocation is set aside for public services. Public services are services that are provided to low-income urban county residents to assist them with things that they need in their daily life, such as childcare, food, shelter, or assistance with utility bills. And although public service funds must be used to assist low-income persons, they also often target specific low-income populations, such as seniors, at-risk youth, persons with mental or physical disabilities, or homeless persons. $211,206 in CDBG public service funds were utilized to fund 14 nonprofit programs, which served 27,858 low-income individuals throughout the last fiscal year. And of those total served, 4,454 were 62 years or older, 3,383 were persons with disabilities, and 238 were veterans, and 24,108 individuals received emergency food assistance. Each of the nearly 30,000 individuals who received assistance through the set-aside CDBG public service funds received some type of assistance with the basic needs of their daily life. And to provide a sense of the good that these nonprofits have been doing our community with these funds, we'd like to highlight a few of the programs from the last fiscal year. The Children's Crisis Center is a nonprofit whose mission is to provide child abuse prevention, intervention, and shelter services to the abused, neglected, and high-risk children and infants throughout Stanislaus County. And throughout the last fiscal year, they provided services to 290 children with respite daycare and resource and referral case management. With the assistance of the Children Crisis Center's Child Respite Care and Case Management Program, Adela, a single mother of 2 young boys, David, 2 years old, and Jacob, 3 years old, was able to stabilize her living situation after fleeing from domestic violence. Her children received child care services at the Children's Crisis Center so that she can maintain her employment, and the center was able to connect her children to the Leaps and Bounds program to address behavioral issues. Because of the assistance Adela received from the Children's Crisis Center, she's gained insight into how erratic parental behavior and a chaotic home environment have impacted her children, and she now realizes that the variety of options that are opened to her and her sons. The American Red Cross is a national nonprofit who provides disaster relief both in the U.S. and worldwide. And one of the core functions of the Red Cross is to respond to disasters in the United States, ranging from home fires that affect a single family, to hurricanes that affect tens of thousands, to earthquakes that impact millions. In these events, the Red Cross provides shelter, food, health, and mental health services to help families and entire communities get back on their feet. And during the last fiscal year, the American Red Cross was able to provide 356 nights of safe lodging for 128 unduplicated individuals following a home fire. On June 30th, a fire destroyed 2 apartment buildings in Ceres, displacing 12 units. Initially, a shelter was set up at the American Legion, but as displaced residents were interviewed, Red Cross determined that there were 19 who needed help with lodging, food, clothing, community referrals, and follow-up services. One family assisted was a mother and her 3 children, and thanks to Stanislaus County funding, they were temporarily lodged in the Ceres Motel, connected to services to help them through the recovery process, including finding new housing, and services to help them through the recovery process. During several follow-up calls, the family was connected to additional resources, which led to rehousing in Houston. The client said how grateful she was for the care given during the fire and in the days and weeks following. She said the compassion shown by Red Cross caseworkers was incredible, and even the small things like the quilts and stuffed animals provided the day of the fire gave her family comfort and hope. ESG, or the Emergency Solutions Grant Program, is another funding the county receives on an annual basis. These funds are for homeless shelter services and for rental assistance for homeless persons or persons who are at risk of losing their housing. Over the last fiscal year, $143,000 was awarded to 5 homeless service providers for 8 homeless programs, which served over 1,200 individuals. 48 individuals made up of 13 households received rapid rehousing and homeless prevention rental assistance. Family Promise of Greater Modesto is the local part of a nationwide network that provides a specialized and effective program for families with children experiencing homelessness. Their Interfaith Hospitality Network, which is a partnership of local congregations, offers an opportunity for volunteers of all faiths to help transform lives by reducing homelessness. Nationally, nearly 80% of the families that Family Promise serves go on to long-term housing, and I believe that locally it's more like 90%. Brittany, the mother of Jaden and DJ, spent 5 months at Family Promise over the last fiscal year. While Brittany was attending a job readiness program, she received a 30-day notice of eviction, and that was when a friend suggested that she contact Family Promise. Although initially skeptical about the stigma of living in a shelter, what Brittany found instead was love and acceptance from all the volunteers at each congregation that took them in. Brittany reports that the case management staff at Family Promise helped her learn about conflict management, about how to voice her opinion and overcome challenging situations. She also stated that the case management she received helped her to learn to manage her money and set priorities. And after her family stay at Family Promise, they were able to find stable housing. Brittany's children have shown improvements with their general behavior and school performance, and Brittany is now working on an AA degree in child development with the goal of becoming a special education teacher. Another program we wanted to highlight, which the Urban County provides with CDBG funds, is Fair Housing and Tenant Landlord Services. These services, which are provided by Project Sentinel, provided 256 Urban County residents with mediation and education regarding fair housing and tenant and landlord rights. And with that, staff recommends that the board close the public review period for fiscal year 13-14 for the CAPER and conduct a public hearing. Authorize staff to incorporate comments received prior to the close of the public comment period and adopt the fiscal year 13-14 CAPER for the CDBG and ESG programs and authorize staff to submit to HUD. And that concludes staff's presentation, and we're available for any questions.
Are there any questions of staff before I open the public hearing? Supervisor Kazin.
I have a question on the homeless management information system. Are you guys familiar with that, or is that because
yes.
That's what ran through?
Yes, we're familiar with it.
Familiar with it. Okay. How do they, what's the definition of homeless? Because I've heard when they had the event, I think it was back in August, there was kind of a convening of all the homeless advocates, and the schools were talking about much higher numbers using their definition. So what is the definition?
Well, the definition is living in a space that's not normally a habitable space, so like a car or a shelter under a bridge. One of the biggest issues with the homeless advocates and with homeless services is that couch surfing is not technically considered homeless under federal regulations, and that's an issue because a lot of the homeless people that they serve and they see around, they know are homeless, especially in schools. Are sharing a couch with family members on a temporary basis, and that doesn't qualify. So that's the issue, I think.
Okay. And then on page 26 of our, well, I didn't see it come up, but this page right here, it shows, we see the trend of the homeless count going down, which is a good trend, but then the change in the special populations, we see it trending in the opposite direction. And you would think they would coincide with each other. Do we know why they'll coincide? Because if there's a larger amount of folks that have co-occurring disorders or mental health issues becoming homeless, but yet we see the homeless population dropping, it seems like they would both be increasing at the same time.
Well, we had a program through the Recovery Act called HPRP, and it was over $1 million, And it did a really good job of housing temporarily homeless families, people who are short-term homeless, but that chronically homeless population, people that often have mental illness, that population you see in that chart has risen, and we're still struggling to find, you know, appropriate accommodations for that population. So that's why that population has grown, but overall the entire population was smaller. There's also kind of, it's all volunteer counting. So, you know,
okay,
the time you do it and where you go, how many volunteers you have can also impact the number.
Thank you.
Any further questions of staff at this time? Seeing none, we'll open the public hearing. I have one request to speak. It's Vernon Lee Price.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Mr. CEO, gentlemen of the board, Madam Clerk, ladies and gentlemen of Stanislaus County. My name is Vernon Price. I am a homeless person and homeless advocate. And Supervisor Chiesa, that's a very good question. Thank you for bringing that up. The couch surfing is considered by national terms shadow homeless. And under the AB5 that we're trying to reallocate, we'll change the definition of chronically homeless to where that would be a part of chronic homelessness, which would be able to statewide open up more services for those that receive permanent housing, that 97% does receive homelessness within 1 year. Because of receiving permanent housing without supportive services, that's the reason why the greater percentage for the National Homeless Coalition and the National Law Center out of Washington, D.C., makes that population greater than the lower population that you're seeing on page 26. I'd like to stand before you today as a consumer saying thank you to all the service providers, to this board, in the CEO's office for the great change that you have made in family lives, and to Supervisor Terry Withrow with sitting on the Mental Health Board of making a great implementation of positive change. But we both know as a state, county, city, and nationwide, we are all struggling as a consumer to try to find and fill a gap of those that fall between the cracks in a seamless system. You have before you today a great plan to implement positive change, not just in this community, but in this city. But the consumer also needs to realize, we need to realize as consumers, that the change is not just within inside the system itself. It's those of us, consumers, need to change also, mainly being chronically homeless. We didn't get there overnight, and it's not going to take, you know, an overnight. I'm not trying to tie God's hands of an instantaneous miracle, because they do happen. But healing usually happens over a period of time. And it's allowing someone to be successful through their mistakes. And Lord knows I've got many of them. And I've produced that before this board, but I thank you for allowing me to still come before this board to see outside of my mistakes and my hurts, habits, hang-ups, and addictions, allowing me to grow through my failures, because that's the only way I'm going to succeed. I'd like to read one thing, though, in closing. It's a United States Interagency Council blog that was posted 8/21/2014, responding to the crisis of homelessness, and this was written by Lauren Green Ziegler, the executive director, in highlighting some things that in the overall system where coordinated assessment, homeless programs, and mainstream programs locally fit together to provide meaningful solutions for people. I want to say thank you for being a contributor of that today. Where true coordination and collaboration, homeless providers and mainstream systems can work together to create seamless responses that does not expect people to navigate multiple programs in an effort to get their needs met. Instead, communities can create a system that, one, is easily accessible to known and known throughout the community, is equipped to reach out to people as necessary, provides services and support options based on what people want and need, connects people with shelter, housing, and service supports without barriers to enter. Building this system requires that all stakeholders in a community work together. You are a part of that system. Understand your value. Where your seat is, or where your seat at the table is, and invite those others' involvement that you need. And in closing this morning, system-level transformation is not easy. If I may just finish two more sentences, I do apologize for the overtime. But will not happen overnight, but it can and is happening in our communities across this country. Together, we will build a crisis response system necessary to achieve and end homelessness in our community. Thank you for your collaboration and your help to those of us in need. Thank you.
And thank you for your comments. Is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to address this board during the public hearing time? Okay, seeing none, close the public hearing, bring it back to the board for action.
Motion to approve.
Okay, motion has been made. Is there a second?
I will second that.
Okay, motion is made and seconded. Is there any further comment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is carried 5-0.
Thank you.
We will now move to agenda item B5, report on Stanislaus County Water Storage Monitoring Resource and Response Strategy. Mr. Skiles?
Good morning, members of the board, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doring. It's a pleasure to be here. I have with me the staff of the Office of Emergency Services for Stanislaus County, and this process that we've been going through for a number of months here has been a challenging one, but it's also been, I believe, the outcome to this point, it has been very successful. We've developed a water shortage monitoring resource and response strategy. And as we move into talk about some highlights of this strategy, I'd like to talk in brief about the purpose and some of the goals that we put forth. And the purpose was to develop a contingency plan, and we can go to the next slide.
There we are.
Is to develop a contingency plan for Stanislaus County. We specifically looked at small rural community water systems that may become limited or fail at some point. The goal was to, again, continue to close monitor, to identify available resources, as well as develop a response. As we went through and worked on this, we first started with, and the next slide is, we started with, where have we come from? And on January 17th, as stated there, the governor proclaimed a drought state of emergency. And what that basically did is it directed the state officials and staff to take necessary actions to prepare for water shortages. The proclamation actually set into motion the standardized emergency management system, something that California takes great pride in. It allows for requests that exceed local area capabilities to be forwarded to the region and then on up to the state for support. Second of all, about approximately 1 month later in February, we developed the Stanislaus County Drought Task Force. Since February, the Drought Task Force has met 6 times. We continue to meet, and our next meeting will be the first part of November again. some of the members or some of the representatives that show up, and by the way, this has been voluntary to participate in the drought task force, but we've continuously and regularly had close to 30 participants. They include representatives from all 9 cities that have been participating. The irrigation districts, OID, TID, MID, have been very active in the drought task force. County departments such as health services agencies, public health, Department of Environmental Resources, the Ag Commissioner's Office, County Council, the CEO's Office, USDA, UC Cooperative Extension, State Water Resources, Cal OES, American Red Cross, and United Way are just a few that participate routinely and regularly in this drought task force. Again, as I mentioned, one of our goals has been to monitor. And we've been monitoring this ever since February very closely through the help of these partners. Again, the drought task force, when formed, was designed to monitor the current and potential impacts of the drought for 2014. And also, it was requested that as Stanislaus County Office of Emergency Services, that we report any significant impacts and also any potential or anticipated impacts to the state on a regular basis. And as of today, we continue to do that routinely. We report as an operational area to the region, which in turn reports to the state. We developed a strategy, or we discussed our strategy, and we said, what route do we go? And as I stated earlier, we chose to go with a small rural community. And one of the things that we did is we started looking, what is the most vulnerable? What area might need help? And as we discussed it, we had to go somewhere with our tabletop exercise. And so we got our Office of Emergency Services staff together, and we put together this small gathering, and we started putting on the board, what if, what if, what if? What if this was to occur, that was to occur? And what was interesting is the outcome is the strategy that we put together here. And we become very confident as a team, as a process, to say that we have the formation of a very good process that's been in place for quite some time in this county under the Office of Emergency Services. Going forward, that will allow us to provide a solution, to provide resources to the citizens of Stanislaus County if and when there becomes a water shortage. Some things that we did in looking forward were to identify what available resources are out there. Tracking, mitigating, and responding are important roles as the Office of Emergency Services. And how do we manage those? And that's where this standardized emergency management system comes into place. I would like to report, though, that as we look at the current situation right now, and just some statistics coming out of the drought task force, which met last Thursday, we find that there is approximately a 20% savings from all of the cities within Stanislaus County are reporting. Water savings, less usage, at approximately 20%. There are a number of programs that are being offered to homeowners within each of these cities, and they've been very creative in the past going forward. The cities have increased their water monitoring and patrol, and each of them are reporting different ways in which they have been doing that. Second of all, the irrigation districts are reporting reduced water usage, which is below anticipated amounts by the ag community, by the farmers in this county. And so I think you can see, just by the reporting and the monitoring that's been occurring, that the citizens of Stanislaus County have been very, very responsible and very receptive to some of the information that's been put out there by not only the irrigation districts as well as the 9 cities which serve the citizens of Stanislaus County. As I talked a little bit about, and I want to spend a little bit of time on the standardized emergency management system, because again, in January, that's what the governor put into place, and that is the rules and that's the regulations in which we fall under as the Office of Emergency Services. The map up there shows Stanislaus County, which falls in the area of Region 4. This state is broke up into 6 regions, and each region reports to the state operations center. The State Operations Center receives information that comes from the counties, to the region, to the state, and the governor's task force, drought task force, is taking information from the State Operations Center. So it's very important that we get good information, that we continue to monitor the existing situation and report it up to the state. We are seeing an evolutionary process occur at the state level in the way of continued and additional resources, legislation coming our way to help support us locally here if there is a water shortage. Some of the partnerships have been Department of Environmental Resources and California Office of Emergency Services. They've been very supportive in this process, and we're grateful for their services in helping develop this strategy. As we look at it and put this strategy together, you can see the hourglass that talks, it goes, how it flows, not only the resources, but also the information. And that was a good visual of what we work under today, under this drought. Again, I want to present to you that this process that we are using for the drought is something that this county has used for influenza, it is used for floods, major power outages, fires, local disasters. It is used it routinely, and we call it the Standard Emergency Management System. The next slide is just an illustration, and it was in the board packet. It is just a snapshot of what we use in our office. And it talks about when the incident is reported. In this case, it would be a water shortage for a small rural community. And by the way, we use this on our tabletop. It would be reported to the Office of Emergency Services. As myself or our office as the assistant director, we would then contact the CEO, who is the director of the Office of Emergency Services, and we would put together a threat assessment group in which would take one of three steps. Dismissal of the incident, it could take a monitoring stand on it, and it could or it could take action. And the action would be that it would implement and move forward into a Stanislaus multi-agency coordination group. The next slides will define a little bit more in this process of those that I just outlined. Again, the threat assessment group is an informal information group that receives information of a water shortage in this case. We would address, again, informally the preliminary and doing a preliminary evaluation of the information from a threat perspective. There would be some decisions that would need to be made. The standing members of the threat assessment group are the director of OES, which is our CEO or representative of the CEO, the assistant director of OES, and then any department representatives providing primary expert knowledge. And they would make these decisions. By the way, we have assimilated and we have put together a threat assessment group regarding the drought at least twice that I know of already this summer. We've had some threats, we've had some items that have come our way. In fact, we made the determination to form the drought task force as a result of a threat assessment group getting together. Moving on, and the next step, if it was suggested from the TAG that we move into the Stanislaus Multi-Agency Coordination Group, that is a more formal process. And that process, again, has a lot of the same members, but we've also identified in this process that we would expand, and it may include representatives from the Department of Environmental Resources, the Ag Commissioner, Public Health, County Council, potentially Animal Services, and the Community Services Agency, all from Stanislaus County. I want to draw attention to the bullet point number 3, which talks about the condition of disaster. One of the things as the STANMAC that we would look at is this truly an emergency? And we evaluated that through the state, through some of the state language to define it as state defines it is, or they ask the question, is it of extreme peril to the safety of persons and property? Certainly if there's a water shortage or if a community goes down, does not have water, yes, that would apply and that would be of extreme peril. We understand that and we recognize that. But that is really the definition that the state places out there, and that is the definition that we as a STANMAC would be considering and answering to move forward. And towards the end, then, if STANMAC chose to engage, we have identified 3 different levels of field response. One, we could identify and coordinate critical resources. And I'll use an example that we used in our tabletop. What if a well goes down? into a small community. Is it truly a well collapse? And I'm not an expert on wells, but it may be a pressure switch. It may be something small. It may be something that we as the county can engage in, and we can get a vendor out there to fix it relatively quickly. And that would be our first choice. And so that's kind of the field response level one. Level two is provide potable water for human consumption, and that would be on the immediate response. And then more long-term, provide resources to sustain safe and healthy living conditions, which may include showers, could include facilities, could include shelters. And the question we ask ourselves in our tabletop, would we shelter in place? Would we evacuate? What works best? And so we have put a process in place, and it has been tested and proven. We put a process in place specifically for droughts that will allow us to receive a report, to go through, vet out the information received, do some research. We have identified already some resources that could respond and would be available both state and locally. The last slide then has to do with our emergency response, and we continue to develop a draft incident action plan. That's what we refer to in the emergency services world as an IAP. And we would look into what would an extended operation be? What would be some of the methodology that we would need to put into place to track incident and economic impacts and so forth. We continue to monitor, and the resources becoming available. I've said several times the state is developing some of their resources, some of their contracts, and we have identified those in the plan. So in closing, I just want to state again that we've been monitoring this process since February, since we brought our drought task force together. We as the Office of Emergencies, as your Office of Emergency Services, plan to stay engaged. One of our mottos at OES is to plan and prepare. Stay engaged and to stay prepared. So before you is the approval to accept this report. I want to thank you as a board back on July 29th for giving the directive that we engage formally in this process and bring you back a report. It's been a great project for us and a great team builder. I would turn this back to you for any questions that you may have of myself and of Ray Jackson, who has taken the lead. And I want to also thank each one of our Office of Emergency Services staff members for helping put this together.
And Supervisor O'Brien.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chief Gus, I want to thank you very much for today's report. I also want to thank you for working hard to put this together. Hopefully it sits on the shelf and we never have to use it. But I think that's pretty much the motto of your department is the low risk, high impact events to always be prepared for. And so I appreciate that. I guess I didn't realize, and what I heard a lot today is how much you've already been doing and already monitor the situation. And I think the public needs to know that our Office of Emergency Services has their eye on this and has plans in case those high impact events occur. So thank you very much. I appreciate the report.
Supervisor Kazin.
Is the drought task force meetings open to the public?
They are. Yes, they are.
And how do we advertise? Do we advertise that? Or?
We have made that available. Anybody who is interested is welcome to contact the Office of Emergency Services, and we can put them on the distribution list. Our next meeting is on November the 6th at 2:30 p.m. at Harvest Hall, I believe, is what we have secured as a location.
Yeah. And this is great work. I would agree. You guys are far ahead of where I thought you were. I know we had a briefing, but I was very surprised at how far along you are in this. I would suggest, because of this, probably when we look at events happening, it could happen countywide. Obviously, the unincorporated area, the small towns with the water system, it would be beneficial. I think getting hooked up with the Farm Bureau and the Farm News would be a great way, because they have most of the rural residents, make sure they're on the list. They might even be participating. But great work so far. And again, hope this is an exercise in futility. You put these plans on the shelf and we never see them again. And welcome back, Mr. Jackson.
Yes. He's been very instrumental in putting this together. I'm thankful for his leadership.
Supervisor Whitrow.
Just great job, Gail. This is good stuff. It's great, like they said, that we've had this in place for a while, and we all learned a lot when you did the briefings with us. And so, just another example of our county and the people, good people we have working for us, and how ready we are for these situations. So, great job, guys.
Thank you.
And Supervisor Monteith.
Well, once again, like others, I want to thank you for services well done. But it also points out the fact that the county, under the leadership of various people in the county, have come up with a system, a process to address emergencies, and that the preparedness goes beyond just one activity or one need. And I think this is a good opportunity to describe to people that there is this preparedness that you all have addressed, so we do not have to invent a new wheel for each emergency. So I want to commend you for that, and thank you once again.
Yeah, I think it's a very good report, and we appreciate all the effort that's went into this. And speaking of small communities, we have the Crow's Landing community had one of their two wells went out several weeks ago. And although it didn't run out of water, it's got a problem with the pump that's going to be slow and expensive to fix. Should the other pump fail, then I imagine you guys would be out there for a while, because the one that failed was their large pump. And so the town is getting by now with that one, the smaller backup well. So I'm glad that we have these procedures in place of what's going to happen should there be no water for a small community. Anyway, good job. Further comments? Motion? So what's before us is to approve the report.
I'll second that.
Again, motion has been made and seconded. We approve this report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, motion is carried. Thank you for your report.
Thank you.
Okay, we will now move to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the Department of the Interior, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, regarding their withdrawal of the proposal to remove the Valley Elderberry longhorn beetle from the federal list of threatened and endangered species.
He referred to the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received a letter from the California State Association of Counties announcing that Stanislaus County is a recipient of the 2014 Challenge Award for the Employee Mentor Program.
He referred to the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and referred to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisors reports? Supervisor O'Brien.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to comment on correspondence number two today. A huge thank you to all of our employees that participate in the mentor program. But I also, and I know we've talked about the mentor program before, but I think a huge debt of gratitude needs to go to the creator and brains behind that program, and that's Mr. Keith Boggs. So, Mr. Boggs, thank you for a job well done. It's great to see other agencies acknowledging the great work.
I'd like to comment on correspondence number one of the Fish and Wildlife Service withdrawing the proposal to remove the elderberry beetle from the threatened species list. This is disappointing because this insect has caused a lot of problems with property rights around the state. And whoever would have thought when the Endangered Species Act was first passed that we would be protecting insects? Very disappointing, because this, if we wanted to eradicate it, we wouldn't be able to. Anybody else? State Legislative and Fiscal Management Report, Mr. Risen.
No report this morning.
Okay, we will now adjourn to closed session. Mr. Doran?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have to begin with conference with legal counsel to discuss existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision D1, involving three cases. The first is the estate of George Ramirez et al. Versus County of Stanislaus et al., United States District Court, Eastern District of California, case number 1:13-CV-00781-LJO-BAM. Second case is Eugene Forte versus Patterson Police Services et al., United States District Court, Eastern District of California, case number 1:13-CV-01980-LJO-SMS. The third and final case is Princey Lackenpaul, M.D. versus Valley Consortium for Medical Education et al., Stanislaus County Superior Court, case number 2008-767. Additionally, there will be conference with labor negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. The agency negotiators are Stan Risen, Nancy Bronstein, and Jody Hayes. The labor organizations are those listed on the agenda. We do not expect to report out on any of these matters.
Is there any public comment on these closed session agenda? Seeing none, this meeting stands adjourned.